Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Lob podcast from These Football Times. And we're back with the One Love series, wherein I'm talking with members of the TFT team about that special love in their life, the football club that they support, and why, despite all the heartaches inevitably endured, it remains their one love. In this episode, I'm chatting with Matthew Gibbs. How are you doing, Matthew? Welcome on board.
Cheers. Thanks for having us, Gary.
No worries. Okay, so basically, first thing to do is tell me who your One Love team is.
I mean, One Love is an interesting way of putting it. It's love and hate, really, isn't it? But yeah, Birmingham City. I'm a lifelong Birmingham City fan, born and bred in Birmingham, in the east side of Birmingham. So, yeah, it's the Blues.
There's a sad a tone of resignation, that sort of acceptance of a fate imposed upon you
It's one of those things, isn't it? Like, you say you love your club and you support it, but no one really enjoys supporting a club. Like, there's nothing enjoyable about it. You enjoy watching football, but following your own club is, how often is it really enjoyable for that? If you ever win a cup or a league or a trophy or something for like half an hour, then you start thinking about the next season again. So.
Yeah, I always say it's like falling in with a femme fatale. You know, there's a few moments of joy, but the agony sort of. That's a great thing. It was many years ago. I was driving home from work. I'm saying many years ago, probably 20 years ago. I was listening to Radio 5, and the guy was interviewing. It was in Glasgow, and it was a sports club for Clyde Bank. Basically, they'd just finished bottom of the second tier, so the first. I don't know what to call the first, but the second tier anyway. They'd finished bottom by about 16 points, and the last couple of games, the goalkeeper wouldn't play because he hadn't been paid, so the reserve team coach had got to go. I mean, really sort of desperate stuff. And the guy was saying to this, you know, you live in Glasgow, so you know, why don't you support Celtic or Rangers or Partick Thistle? And this guy said, only somebody who doesn't understand a football club supporter would ask that question, because they're not your club. You belong to them. They'll break your heart. You know, you'll give them a few moments of joy, but most of it will be agony, but you'll still go back because you're stuck with them. And it's true, isn't it, Matt? Yeah.
It's about, I mean, I always describe whenever, I don't know, I talk about my brother about this sort of stuff, about the difference between supporting clubs in England compared to other countries. And I think, you know, you got like Italian and Spanish clubs where their matches at a weekend are treated like an event. Like the whole weekend is geared towards, oh, Real Madrid are playing the weekend, we're going to go and it's going to be a day out, we're going to get food before, there'll be drinks, there'll be a whole thing, we'll go support the club, all that sort of stuff. Whereas football in Britain, in England, is more of like it's an everyday thing, like going to work. It's like, it is romantic, but it's not something you get excited about. It's just a thing you do. It's like, this weekend I'm going to go to the Blues. I don't even think about it. It's just something I've done my whole life. So it's more everyday important, like going to get your groceries or something. It's like, yeah.
I love the metaphor. It's like going to work. It's like it's not obligation. It's not a pleasure.
I don't mean that in like it can't be passionate, because it is passionate, but it's more of like a, you know, it's important to you. Like needing to eat is important. Like you can enjoy a food, and other times you could not enjoy a meal. But it's the thing you do because you need to do it to survive. Is a bit dramatic with the football club, but you know, it's a thing you do. It's what I've done for. I'm 31. I've been going to the Blues like 31 years. So what else am I going to do? I'm not going to do something else, am I?
I remember, I always say when I sit down to watch my team play, time for misery. Because you're going to get a few months of joy, but you're going to get loads of frustration as well. But anyway, let's get the ball out and have a kick about, buddy. I mean, you answered the first question, which is why this club and how you've followed them. Because obviously you're sort of East Birmingham born and bred, and 30-odd years, you say?
Yeah, I mean the reason I'm a Blues fan is because of my dad and my family. The Gibbses are all Blues fans. We're a massive family. My nan and granddad, they are both I think my granddad's got 13 siblings and my nan's got 9 siblings. And every single one of them has like a dozen children themselves. And every single one of them is a Blues fan. We're all from that area. We spread out since, you know, in the years following. We're all over the globe these days, but all of them are Blues fans. So yeah, it's just how we're raised. I think my dad told me once that my first Blues game was when my mom was pregnant with me. He took her to a game. And so I've been going since forever. So Yeah, it's just like I say, it's just what we've always done. It's part of it. 50% of the conversations when we have family gatherings is about the Blues. So
it's interesting. I mean, I had asked this question to Steve Craig when I was doing the Liverpool one with him. Birmingham, like Liverpool, is a two-club city. Were you ever tempted to be a Villa fan?
There was a time when my best friends in primary school were all Villa fans. And so there was a time when me and my dad were kind of in a stupid argument about something, and I sort of made a joke about being a Villa fan and kept it up for like a few weeks. But it was a bit before I got really into football, so it didn't really mean anything. And ever since I developed a sort of, I think I was in like year four or year five. So how old are you then? Like eight or nine? When I sort of started to really, really love football. And I mean, even before then, I'd been going down to the Blues for like forever. It was just, again, like a thing we do. But my dad used to, because my mum works in hospital, well, they both work in hospital. So whenever my mum worked a late shift, he'd let me stay up late and he'd put on all the old Blues VHSs. And so we'd sit and watch like the highlights from 88, 89 or highlights from the Leyland Daft Trophy in 90, 92 and 94. Paul Tate's header, Howard Gale's overhead kick, all that sort of stuff. So that was the thing we did. Stayed up late watching these Blues videotapes. So since then, you never really had a choice. It's ingrained in you. It's part of it. So
fair comment. Okay, so some questions about your sort of views on the club. So first question is the best player ever to play for the club. Now, not say your favourite player, which might be, but the best player ever to play for the club.
Is this ever, or is it in my lifetime?
However you want to answer it, it's up to you.
Ever is going to be Trevor Francis. There is no other. I mean, him and Gil Merrick have a very outsized and gigantic, but their shadows loom large over the club that nobody really comes close. Trevor Francis, especially. I mean, I once saw Trevor Francis in Solihull, which is this town just outside of Birmingham where a lot of the footballers live. I went to college there, and I saw him once in Solihull just buying a paper and reading a paper, and I was like transfixed. I was like opposite, going, "Oh my god. Oh my God, that's Trevor Francis!" And like, I'd never seen him play, obviously, but his reputation and his status, like, I think there are plans to build a statue of him at some point, and it's past due, that is, because his ability on the ball and the impact he had on the pitch from such a young age. He made his debut at like 16, so that was he's without doubt the best player to ever play for the club in my lifetime. However, it's probably Christoph Dugarry, because that was. Not too long after when Blues got to the Premier League, was not too long after my sort of football awakening, when I first started getting into football properly and started actually not just playing it, but following teams and following players and stuff like that. So I was there for most of his performances. I was definitely there for the one which is, I think, possibly the greatest performance from a player I've ever seen at St Andrews, when we beat Southampton 3-2 and he scored two goals, one header and one free kick. And it was... The man had a way of floating across a pitch, and his control was, he should never have played for us. That was, I still to this day don't even know how they managed to pull that off, because he was far too good for we were very workmanlike at the time, and he had a lot of grace on the ball. So that's two answers for you, I think.
No, it's fine. No, that's good. A few years ago, I was commissioned to write a piece about Dugarry and did some research. Apparently, Steve Bruce signed him in, and he convinced him to sign over a cup of tea. Which I think is sort of a little bit quaint.
Especially because Dugarry very, very famously hated Britain, very famously hated everything to do with Britain. He's now the French equivalent of Roy Keane. He's the grumpy man who's on TV sort of lambasting everybody every game and saying, back in my day, it was different this way. So for that to have worked, it shocks me even more.
Okay, so aside from the best player, which we've touched on there, and he gave two wishes, absolutely fine. Playing hero.
I was a massive fan of Sebastian Larsson when I was younger. He joined after one of the years when we were doing a bit of the yo-yo act, and after we got relegated in 2008, I'm going to get my dates mixed up, 2008 or 2007. And he joined, and we signed an Arsenal trio on loan. It was Sebastian Larsson, Fabrice Mwamba and Nicholas Bednar. And Larsson was the perfect Blues player, really, because we're a club that... We don't tend to trust flair. There's a journalist called Sean Cole who does a lot of work for 442 and some other places. And he wrote an article about, I think it was for When Saturday Comes, about how Birmingham we're such a working class club that we don't trust flair and technique almost. If you're not working hard, it's not, it doesn't sit right. But he had the best of both worlds, where he was a wicked free kick taker, capable of like putting in the top corner from 30 yards, a wicked cross on him, but also worked his socks off. And one of the greatest moments I've ever experienced down the ground was the last day of the season, we needed to beat Sheffield Wednesday too. We needed to beat Sheffield Wednesday to get promoted. I think it was more to secure promotion. I think we're basically promoted anyway. But we had a player sent off after like 10 minutes or really early on. And somewhere we scored a goal, and somewhere in the second half, Sebastian Larsson picks up the ball on the halfway line and runs down the right wing into the box past about two or three Wednesday players and scores a goal all by himself. Real from the halfway line, thinking, I didn't know a stadium could rock in the way that it did. You could feel it moving under your feet. It was a pretty amazing moment. And definitely the player I really liked as a kid.
Absolutely fair play. Okay. Best manager.
See, that's a tricky one. I guess the answer really should be Alex McLeish, but he also kind of tainted himself by we won the cup, and then he left to go to join Villa. And maybe if there had been like a club buffer in between that, it wouldn't have been so bad. But a lot of fans don't really forgive him for that, even if he did give us our greatest day of the last since the 60s. I guess we've not really been blessed with a lot of very good managers. I mean, the last 12, 13 years has been pretty grim up until this season. A lot of suffering and basement battles. Steve Bruce, probably, just because we got promoted and we had a good few years in the Premier League, and there's a lot of iconic Blues moments from those 4 or 5 years in the Premier League. So, and again, it's like I said, like we're a club that we don't trust technique and flair and stuff, and his team were very workmanlike, and we had Jeff Horsfield up front, into Morrison, Kenny Cunningham, and Matt Upson at the back, and very, very hardworking team. That was a very 4-4-2 team, but it worked, and we had some good days in the Premier League.
Most frustrating or disappointing player, however you want to define that.
How long you got, man? Jeez, there's a long list because we have a very long potted history of signing players and them never working out. I mean, there was the much vaunted signing of Alexander Chleb from Barcelona on loan in the 2010-2011 season. And he was awful. He was really rubbish. But then, I don't know, there was the year a few years ago under Harry Redknapp, where we spent like 15 million in a transfer window when we didn't have the money. And that absolutely screwed us over until this summer is the first year we've been free from that. And it's been about 6 years. And he signed a lot of players. The main one from that bunch of players that he signed, though, was Hotter. We signed him from Brentford. I think we broke our record fee to sign him. And he was signed as a sort of tricky Spanish sort of, not winger, he was very quick, but a sort of like playmaker that played out wide. And he had some moments. He scored a few goals, did a few stuff. He was just a bit crap. And that is definitely one of the most galling signing of the last 15 years anyway, one that is very emblematic of how the club was run for the last 15 years.
I'm going to ask you the same question about manager, but before I do, my most frustrating, disappointing manager of Birmingham City is many years ago, well, I say many years, probably 8 years ago, 9 years ago now, I used to run a design agency, graphic design agency in Birmingham, and it was owned by a guy who owned a printing company as well. And they were the print partners for Birmingham City. And as such, we got invited to a lot of the sort of corporate things at the club and match days and the events, the players' awards and all this sort of thing. And at the time, Gianfranco Zola had been appointed as manager. Now, imagine me as a Chelsea fan thinking, you know, we're going to go to the players' awards thing with Franco, is going to be there. I'm going to get to meet Franco. And of course, about two months before the event, they bloody sacked him. So I missed theirs. But so your most disappointed or frustrating manager?
I mean, again, there's been a lot over the last decade. Every single one of the managers that we've essentially hired over the last decade they've joined. There's been some fanfare that maybe this will be different this time, and then they've not worked out in the end. We've had like short term success staving off relegation, but then it rinses and repeats for the next year. I was quite disappointed with Gary Monk. Because we had a really great year with him, like a great relative term, but we had Shay Adams and Lukas Jukovic up front, which was a really pretty good front two in the Championship at the time. And I think we finished like 15th? But it would have been higher because we had a points deduction. The season before had been the disaster under Zola. So we were still recovering from that. And that was very much a, we thought it was going to be different. And then at the end of the season, he was surprisingly sacked because of some dodgy dealings with his agent and stuff like that. The true story has never really come out, but it was all a bit suspicious and dodgy and it left under a bit of a cloud. But after that, we had Ita Karanka, who we had been after before and hadn't been able to get. And he was someone who had a lot of success getting Middlesbrough into the Premier League and kept them up, and then had a good year with Forest nearly getting them up. And so he joined, and that was supposed to be the next tomorrow, the bright dawn for us. And that was maybe the worst season of the lot in many ways. It's difficult to argue with Lee Clark, who very famously once started an 11 of equal numbers right-footed and left-footed players to try and arrest a run of like 10 losses in a row. But it's got to be Ita Karanka. That football was dog shit. That was hopeless. And then it was also went into the COVID year, so we never actually saw him in the stadium. It was all empty stadiums, and it was just terrible football that was being played out, and it was horrible. So I have to go with Ita Karanka for that one.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, you've had a couple of. I remember when I said going back to the time when I was sort of involved with Birmingham City, and I met Gary Rowett, and I always had a more than decent manager. You sacked him to put Zola in, and then you sacked Eustace to put Rooney in. And twice you've got rid of decent, what appeared to be fairly successful progressive managers, and put a big name in.
Yeah, it's one of those ones. The Rowett one always rankles a little bit because the headline news is that we sacked Rowett and replaced him with Zola when we were like sixth in the table. But the real story that like Blues fans know because of rumours and the stuff that comes out from people in the know and everything that had been reported recently that doesn't really get published in like, you know, The Athletic say, oh, Birmingham City have sacked Rowett, sixth in the table. That's the headline thing that people read. When really, Rowett had apparently been winking at other clubs. He had a few interviews, I think, with QPR, with Fulham. Was very close to taking over. I want to say Fulham until he was offered a new contract by the club. Ended up staying. And the football, especially in that season, like I think he'd had 10 games with us before he got sacked. It was horrible. It was not good to watch. He's always been very sort of organised football. He's a very organised manager that it's not going to thrill you, but you know it gets results and gets the job done. But it was horrible to watch. That season was really not very good. the issue then is putting Zola in charge. You know, you're going from like this team that plays like a low block with in 4-4-2 that lets the other team have the ball, then Zola comes in and is like, yeah, we're gonna control the ball. And that was a tough run. That season with Zola in charge, where did we win two games in 27, something like that?
Yeah, it was terrible, terrible.
Yeah, that was tough. I had a season ticket. Like was that my first year? No, it wasn't my first year of owning a season ticket. Was Lee Clark, which was bad, and so I kept it through that. And yeah, that was really bad. That was hopeless football. That was under Zola, and I never really blamed Zola because he tried his best, and he's a nice guy. And we have a very bad habit of signing really dour managers, managers who never really know how to smile and to enjoy themselves. And football's about enjoying it. You're supposed to enjoy it as well as get results, and we've never really had managers who seem to enjoy it. Even Rowett, who I really like Rowett, and he was definitely one of the better experiences as a manager, was, you know, he had moments of dourness. But yeah, so the Rowett one, there's a lot of stuff about that didn't really get reported. Yeah, the Eustace one was a whole thing. A little bit similar in the sense that I think if he'd been sacked two games before, it probably wouldn't have been such a big deal because we went a month without scoring. And it was quite fearful football. It was just, if you're going to sack him, why give it to Wayne Rooney? That's a whole thing. So,
I mean, I haven't asked this question with the other guys, but I just think it's particularly relevant with Birmingham. Is you've had some what's the word I'm looking for? Interesting owners.
Mm. Yes, we a long history of dodgy owners going back to the 90s. The Kumar brothers.
And then we had
a very successful 10 years really with Sullivan Gold and Brady, but they, you know, the way they made their money isn't exactly beyond scrutiny. They had some interesting names over the years. Yeah, and it's kind of amazing really because, you know, when the season we won the League Cup and got relegated was the year that we got bought by Carson Young, who I don't know how there weren't alarm bells from the start, you know, knowing that he was a hairdresser from Hong Kong, and there was some very much some question marks about how he had made his money. But Golden Sullivan sold up, and then I think 2 years later he was arrested by the Hong Kong police, put in jail, and I think there was a month or so that we were technically owned by the Hong Kong police, which not a lot of clubs can say that. And then everything that happened since then, when the selling us to Trillion Trophy Asia, I recommend anybody to go dig out some of the stories about the guys who owned us during that period, because they are some characters. There's lots of stories about one of the old CEO, Don Gren. Apparently he used to take the League Cup, the actual trophy, and put it in his office. And so he'd work with the trophy on his desk while he's wearing full blues tracksuits, and then go out into the training ground to walk around with the team, and he's wearing full blues tracksuits, and it's all just a bit weird. And I mean, I make jokes, but they really let the club go to rot. After a few years of them owning us, we had to close down half the stadium because there were structural issues going on, and they did nothing to repair it, really. It wasn't until we got taken over by the Americans, Shelby Knighthead, whatever they're called, Knighthead, that those issues got fixed, and they really let. That was a pretty tough time to be a Blues fan, really, because we never got relegated, but it was very, every year felt like this was going to be the season. And I think when you, was it 8 years basically of 8 or 9 years of not finishing in the top half of the table, it grinds you down, and you don't really enjoy going. It's a very grey experience when you go during that time, and half the stadium is closed, and you're watching some of the worst footballers you've ever watched try and kick a ball in a straight line, and they can't. And that was not a very fun few years to be a Blues fan, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Walsall, so just north of Birmingham, and I've got a few mates who are back in the day from Blues fans, and they used to say, you know, we're cursed by our owners. Absolutely cursed, you know. It's just like you couldn't pick a worse pack of owners we've had in the last few years. I mean, it's going back to the Carson Young time, you know, the guy apparently running the club from his cell in Hong Kong. Weird. Okay, so we're going to get
I'm sure people know, well, maybe they don't, but if you're a Blues fan, Daniel Ivory is a very well-known name to Blues fans. He's sort of like a super fan who spent years and years. I don't actually know what his background is. I don't think he's even a lawyer, but he's got background in some financial knowledge. Spent years doing a one-man mission to try and find out all the dark secrets of Trillion Trophy Asia. Did an amazing job, and he was, I think, banned from the club, but he had some contacts, and there's all sorts of stuff. He would go out to Hong Kong and Cambodia and try and find out where these people lived and try and find out more information about it, and did a whole series of articles on his website to put pressure on the owners to get them to sell up. And I don't necessarily think he did that himself. I think at some point the owners got sick and tired of like the protests and this, you know, all the sort of stuff that comes with that, the national scrutiny and all the exposés in The Guardian and the Athletic. But Daniel Ivory, if you check out his website, he's got some absolutely incredible stories about the goings on at the club during that was it 6 years, 7 years that they owned us. A one-man mission to get rid of them, and he kind of did it. Yeah, absolute, the epitome of a super fan.
Interesting time to say. This is what I like to call the Charles Dickens section of the conversation. So the first question is the best of times.
Best of times. I mean, probably winning the League Cup, they're definitely winning the League Cup. I mean, that season was a very bizarre season, but the run to get to the final where we beat Aston Villa in it was a pretty scrappy game, but you know, we got the win in the last minute, and our stadium absolutely bouncing. And then that season was when I was doing my A levels, and I against my own mother's wishes, I was like, I have a biology test tomorrow, but I'm not going to revise. I'm going to go to the semi final against West Ham. And I'm so glad that I did, because I got to be in the stadium when Craig Gardner sticks one in the bottom corner from 25 yards out, and just delirium. It's one of those ones where you never really experience celebrations like that. I wasn't sitting in usually I sit in the Tilton, which is one of the back, and that I couldn't get a ticket, so I had to sit in the family stand, but I could see the celebrations all around you. You're a bit lower. It was incredible. Didn't get to go to the final because we couldn't afford tickets for the whole family. So me, dad and my brother, we watched it at home. I shouted myself dizzy when Obafemi Martin scored. I had to lie down because my head was spinning, because I screamed and tore a lung or something by that much. It was an amazing achievement. And I, even now, like, what is it, 13 years later, I still don't really know if we understand the enormity of what we did that day, beating a pretty good Arsenal team with the players that we had in the way that we did. It was, really special.
You know, I always find this sort of interesting when I talk to people about football, and you know, without sort of being disparaged, and not top line, top six club, you know, the success that, you know, even if you're in the Evo-stick third division, you know, if you aspire to promotion, get promotion, that's just as important as Manchester City winning the European Cup. It's just, you know, I mean, because it's the glory you can aspire to, and you know, as you say, it's sort of almost reached beyond what you could possibly expect, and to have that glory then, it was, I mean, you know, it's the magic moments on there. It absolutely was the best of times for you, I guess. Okay, so obviously, you know, the sort of the flip of that coin is the worst of times.
I mean, it's very easy to say the one last season we got when we got relegated last season, but it wasn't really. I mean, I think it was by that point we'd been ground down by year on year, just constant relegation battles and having to win on the last day to get out of trouble and knowing that the budget isn't any bigger and we're going to have to get a new manager again. He's probably not going to be that good. He's probably not going to be as good as the last guy. And I think by that point, it was we'd had the American investment, which I have, there's stuff about that as well. But we'd already had the American investment, so the vibe around the club was different. I'd have to say, and I don't know, there's so many choices to choose from. There's a thing with me, because I go to the football with my brother. We have season tickets in Moonwood, so we go to every home game. And was it last season under Eustace or the season before? We have a thing where there's always the midweek games when it's pissing it down in January or February and it's cold and it's horrible. And we're playing Cardiff, and Cardiff haven't won a game in 10. And they, you just know that. You walk to the stadium and it's like sleet, and you don't have an umbrella, you just got a hood, and it's horrible. And you get there and you're like, I know exactly what's going to happen here. I know exactly what is going to happen here. We're going to concede early and concede late, and we're going to lose, and everyone's going to boo, and it's going to be horrible. And the cycle continues and goes on again. And that happened a few times last season season before under Eustace. We lost at home to Blackpool, I think, to an own goal, and they were bottom of the league and hadn't won for like 15 games. I think those sort of games are the worst ones, when you go in and you're like, you know what's coming. You know, we've not been great recently. We did this last season. It was a different manager, some different players, but everything's the same, really. And it was those, for me, I think, are the worst ones. And you're like, why am I even doing this? I spent so much money a season to go see these jokers on the pitch, and this is what they do. So, yeah, I think there was a few those performances under Lee Bowyer a few years ago when it really felt, you know, half the ground was empty, closed down, no announcement of when that might be built up again. There's no hot water in the toilets. Every I think at that point we were bringing in like 13,000 fans. You know, we've got like a 27,000 seat stadium at 30,000 if they do it right, and we were bringing in like 12,000-13,000 people, and you're there surrounded by horrible, just cold and. Cold and lonely, and those are the worst games for me. I think that Lee Bowyer one really took the piss with that.
I mean, that's a fair description of the worst of times. I mean, it is, you know, and I guess, you know, at various stages. I mean, I remember going, you know, when I was younger, before we came out here, I used to go to watch Warsaw regularly, you know, and Warsaw was third tier, fourth tier sort of thing, and you know, I've been to a few of those games,
I have to say, this reminds me, the Warsaw, because we played Warsaw in the Cup this year, and this is a slightly different worst at times, I guess, in a way. But I've been going to the football for 30 years, and I know there's lots of stereotypes that can be in our set about football fans, and you know, the hooligan stuff and the way that you expect to hear the language that some football fans use. Never really heard that down the Blues. I'm not saying it's the most welcoming place in the world, but it's never really one where I've heard like abuse, or you know, I've never really heard stuff where I've had to turn around and be like, "What did you just say?" We played Warsaw in the Cup, the Bristol Street Motors Trophy, you know, the Leyland Dap one. And we didn't sit where we usually sat because they didn't have that side of the stadium open. But for the first time ever down the Blues, I heard some of the most aggressive misogyny I've ever heard in my life. It was disgusting. And we had to leave at half time because the whole experience was horrible. And it really sort of flew in the face of what I think the whole vibe shift they're trying to do down the Blues and make it more welcoming to families, to get more women to come, to get more people of colour to come. And that was definitely one of the worst games I've been to down the Blues in that regard. And it only happened like a month ago. Really, it was really, really, really vile.
It's interesting there, because the next question we ask you, I mean, you know, some people would say, well, you know, Birmingham in the third tier for the first time for quite a while. But they're also spending big on players. So how are they doing now?
Oh, it's a total... It's really weird. It's like a total turnaround from what it was like this time last year. I think they still hadn't even finished fixing the ground. And now the place is unrecognisable. I don't know if anybody... I'm sure people listening to this have done away days at St Andrews before, but if you haven't been for a few years, you probably wouldn't recognise it. A total turnaround in vibe, a total turnaround in how the place looks. I think we've sold out the last sort of six home games in a row. It is pretty extraordinary. Kind of a bit taken aback by it all. Like we've spent a lot of money in the summer. I think apparently the numbers that have been reported in the press is not actually that big. Although, I mean, the difference between spending 30 million, 20 million in League One, I mean, it's still stupid money, isn't it? It's still ridiculous. But it's a total change. I mean, even the football we're playing we're like a mini Tottenham at the minute, you know, the way that Ange has Spurs playing. It's very much that sort of quick passing football. We regularly rack up 80% possession every game at the minute. We're recording this on a Monday. On Saturday, we played Peterborough and we went 2-0 down after about 15 minutes. And at no point was I really concerned. I was like, probably, we've got some pretty good players at this level. We've got basically a mid-table championship squad in League One. And I was pretty confident that we would at least draw, if not turn it around. And we did. We won 3-2 in the end. It's pretty extraordinary. And I mean, everybody is buzzing. The vibe is different. The atmosphere is so much better than it was even just last year and the year before. I have my own issues with certain aspects of the American ownership. I don't like when fans are very sycophantic and to a fault where... I know me and Gary did the pod the other day and we're talking about how, you know, these type of hedge funds, they will buy clubs and they're not doing it out of the goodness of their own heart. They're not benefactors. They're not doing it for charity. They do it because they're taking on the term used was a distressed asset, and they're going to turn it around and flip it for profit. And they're going to, along the way, they're going to do amazing things and stuff that we're going to like. And supposedly they're building this huge new sports quarter in Birmingham that's going to revolutionize the that part of town where it's going to be built. And that's amazing. But I still struggle with the, you know, the chanting of the chairman's name and taking everything they do as something incredible, and the tribalistic elements of football where they announced that they really wanted to play this game against Wrexham a few weeks ago in America. And some people were like, yeah, it looks, some people were kind of like on the fence about it, like maybe it's a thing, like, nah, it's crap, it's terrible. Like just because they're our owners doesn't mean that you need to stop questioning the decisions that they make. I mean, even last season, like the whole Wayne Rooney debacle, that was obviously a bad idea from the start, and they plucked away with it, and now we're in the third division. So I have my own issues with treating these new owners as like messiahs, and I don't really like the Hollywoodification of it all. You know, the way that the Wrexham game was marketed makes me very uncomfortable. It's not really what I like about football. I love American sports. I love NFL and baseball, but I like that there. I don't necessarily like that here. So while I have my issues, it's a total vibe shift. We look incredible. I don't even think we've started playing that good football yet. We're still putting in 6 out of 10 performances. We're still yet to really step on the gas. And it's going to be quite exciting to see how that looks when we do. I think we might blow away a few teams this season. But it is absolutely remarkable to see the total turnaround that's happened down at St Andrews.
Yeah, it's just my wife's a Wolves fan, and she always says that when the Wolves were in the third tier, you know, that they scored on ridiculous amount of goals and run through the league, and she's that's one of the favourite seasons, which seems a bit strange. But in the Championship, it's like climbing through mud. So there's two teams who are going to get promoted probably, two teams are going to get relegated probably, and the rest you could think that could go either way. So it's a world difference. So I guess
I do feel a little bit sort of a bit like if you took a caveman and put him in like 20th century, he wouldn't know what was going on. A little bit like that with the football at the minute down the Blues. Like we play some scintillating stuff, and I'm just sort of sat there like, oh, Jesus, oh, this is remarkable. I remember, I don't know, like some performances under Rowett and Karanka where you come out and they're like, we had 15% possession that game. We had like 2 shots on target, and now we're passing it around like we're 80s Brazil or something. It's remarkable. I've yet to get super excited by the season because I think I'm still getting to grips with it. I'm like, it's like I've got whiplash.
Well, given that, penultimate question is, where will Birmingham be in 5 years' time?
5 years' time, that is a good question. I think there is a very good chance that we get promoted this season. This current run, as we're filming, I was very concerned about because we're playing all of our promotion rivals and we're kind of coming out of it looking pretty good. I think there's a very good chance that we go up this season. I think we have a very good very good basis of a squad. That means that I think next year we will, you know, say that we get promoted and the next year we will be fine. I don't know whether we'll be challenging promotion again, doing an Ipswich. I'm not sure. But I think we'll be fine. In 5 years' time, I guess the dream would be to be in the Premier League, although, you know, depending who you ask, is that really the dream? I think we mentioned earlier that football is such an everyday thing and going to the Blues is such an everyday thing to me. I don't really care what division we're in. I'm going to go down. I'm not going to go down. It's how I hang out with my brother and my family and my dad. So we could be, you mentioned the Evo stick or whatever, we could be relegated four divisions down and I will still go to the pub with my dad and my brother and we'll go to the football.
You've sort of almost segued nicely into my last question, but also answered a little bit as well. So the final question I always ask the guests on this series is, could anything make you change your club allegiance?
No. I mean, I get really confused because, I'm really into American sports and I'm really into baseball. And you read articles about baseball and they talk about, oh, yeah, like in 85 to 90, I was a Kansas City Royals fan, but then I moved to New York and became a Mets fan. I'm like, how? What? How do you do that? Well, you just switch your allegiance at the drop of a hat. No, I am Birmingham born and bred. It's where I've lived most of my life. It's where I'm, I don't know, it's my city. I'm very proud to be from Birmingham and I'm very proud to be a Blues fan. And like I say, it's a big part of my relationship with my family. Grew up in the east of Birmingham. I'll always be from the east of Birmingham, so I'll always be a Blues fan.
I mean, it's the classic answer, and you know, I mean, I guess you know if you're a fan of a football club, it is difficult to imagine. Like as I mentioned, that sort of radio interview a while ago. But a massive thank you, Matthew, for coming on and having a chat about Birmingham City, mate. Thank you so much for that.
No, thanks for having me on. Always good to talk about the Blues.
Okay, buddy. Well, that rounds out our conversation with Matthew for his one love, and it seems pretty safe that his one love will be his one love for a long time yet. So catch us next time on the series, and we'll be talking to another guest from TFT about their one love football club. But for now, cheers. Goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.